And with Dr. Keith Scott Mumby, MD, who is just fascinating. You know, we could spend hours on nutrition, but I'm not going to do that. We'll take, by the way, your phone calls next hour. I want to find out here before we move on. Is there something that we can do as far as to reliably know what not to eat? Because since we've been talking about this all hour, that sure would help. Also, choosing gets harder when things aren't labeled properly. What's genetically modified? No safety standards for some of the imported foods that also aren't always labeled. So a number of things there, but also want to get into environmental medicine and the role emotions play on our health. That's part of the three pillars of medicine that Dr. Scott Mumby recognizes. Also, I won't forget about voice repatterning, which you might have heard about before on Coast to Coast. It's absolutely fascinating. And also the CNR, which I've actually gotten some emails saying, you got to go over that again. So all that and more coming up with Dr. Keith Scott Mumby and Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM. It is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Raleigh James, and we have Dr. Keith Scott Mumby, MD, with us, alternativedoctor.com, or right on Coast to Coast AM. There's a wonderful link. And so here we are, and like I say, I could do this all night, believe me, but looking at, okay, food allergies are playing havoc with all of our health. And now we're basically saying that currently, right here, there's very little we can do to truly certify what we're allergic to.
It's so individualistic. It's trial and error, and you have to figure it out yourself or find the help of an expert. But unfortunately, there are very few experts. And by the way, that leads me to, I better clarify a point that came up just before the break. I'm not taking patients. You know, one of the reasons I shoot my mouth off and say outrageous things is that I'm not taking patients. I do mentoring. That's available via my website, you know, but that's a different story. Just people who need to know or need help. But so often it's a very idiosyncratic individual program, and that's a whole kind of that's one of the differences, you know, between alternative medicine and conventional medicine. In conventional medicine, everything is average. You know, we're all the same. Everything boils down to the average. What does the average person do? What is the average dose you'd give for an average condition? And we realize in alternative medicine that just doesn't work. For a start, statistically, nobody is average. You know, if the average height is, you know, 5'9" or whatever, there are very, very few individuals that have that height. Everyone clusters around it. But nobody's truly average. If you take even four or five characteristics, there's nobody that meets all the average criteria at once. So we look at medicine in a different way. In fact, it's a different philosophy. You know, I consider myself a medical philosopher as much. You know, I'm just a professor of nutrition, but I do a whole philosophic view of these things. I mean, the biggest overview I have of this is, if you just give me a minute for this, I'm sure it's valuable, Raleigh, for your listeners, is what I call body load, or the total body burden. And, you know, our bodies are magnificent at fighting things. I mean, they fend off instant death several times a day, you know, bacteria, dehydration, all kinds of stresses. But it can deal with that. It's only when the overload reaches a point where the body can no longer cope that something starts to go wrong. And you almost voiced it in the first segment, where what happens is it depends on the individual. You know, the first part of the body to break down, we call the target organ or the shock organ. And the symptom doesn't really relate to what the allergy is or what the poison is or what the emotional shock is. The symptom really relates to what organ gets challenged. So if it's the skin, you know, you'll get a rash. If it's the bowel, you might get colitis or Crohn's or diarrhea or something. One of the commonest shock organs, of course, is the brain, because it's very sensitive. So you can get all kinds of things from stimulus to depression. So a person can suffer reduced function, they can get tired, and somebody raised the question of, you know, chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia and so on. But it can go the other way also. A person gets stimulated, aroused. This was the violent youth we talked about at the beginning. He had such extreme cerebral excitation, he became dangerous and actually tried to kill somebody. I've seen sexual excitation, you know, when somebody, it sounds crazy to some people, it's not just aphrodisiacs, but, you know, specific foods have caused a person a quite surprising and in many ways embarrassing sexual response, you know, but it's really just another kind of brain stimulation. So the bigger picture is, you know, the disease is seen in terms of body burden. If you can, it's a Mumby saying, Scott Mumby saying, you don't need zero allergies to get zero symptoms. you just have to bring the load down to what's tolerable for the body, at which point the symptoms will switch off. So, you know, you don't have to live in a glass bubble in the middle of the Atlantic and eat just organic lettuce.
Now, it's interesting you brought up standard of care, basically, or cookie-cutter medicine, if you will, because, unfortunately, allopathically, we're moving closer and closer to one-size-fits-all. In fact, just today, Woody, who is in the Boston area, emailed an article on computer-generated medicine. And, you know, forgetting about the electronic records privacy issue and all of that, is the fact that, you know, you'll even hear candidates standing up and talking about how everybody deserves the same care. And, you know, you hear that and your blood runs cold. It seems like allopathic medicine is running in the other direction from what you're suggesting.
Well, that's right. And this is, again, this is one of the big fundamental differences. But, you know, there's interesting, great news on the horizon here, Roy. We're back to sort of genomics again and these little variations that we call SNPs, gene variations. I mean, the reason, take the Vioxx catastrophe, okay? A lot of people died, but not everybody died. So the point is some couldn't tolerate it and some could. How would you know? So we're now working towards the concept, or the proper concept would be personalized medicine. You know, you tailor it to the person. Would you believe the FDA? I know, you know, we don't like the FDA.
No.
We tend to spit the pavement when they walk past.
Yes.
But in fact, the FDA has come out with a position paper, which is wonderful, and it says they are considering moving towards a view where if you don't do the gene profile before you give the person the drug, and then they die because they can't metabolize it, that you're guilty of negligence. And that position paper was published over a year ago now. So even the FDA, bless them, is having to admit that, you know, it's very much a person. We're not all the same, and therefore the same standards cannot apply to every person. And it's only just around the corner when they will absolutely demand that you do a gene profile to see what people are like before you start to mess with their physiology.
Well, will that gene profile be able to show who's likely to succumb to Vioxx, for instance?
Oh, yes. Well, you can, you know, you look for certain, like, for example, methylation pathways. You know what to look for. You know which SNPs would damage that pathway. Or the P450, that's the oxidation detox pathway. You know what SNPs to look for. So you don't have to run everything, you know, like on 25,000 genes.
Right.
You look for specific targets.
Oh, for the markers. So if you're looking at autoimmunity, you look at HLA-B27. And things like that.
Yes, that's right, yes.
All right.
So it's coming, and it's exciting. And what's really exciting is the FDA are on board instead of fighting it to the death. And they're saying, we're right there with you, boys. So it's good, isn't it?
Well, that's actually alarming, but in a nice way. Now, so what we're really saying here to wrap up diet is that it's somewhat nebulous in terms of discovering what it is that will trigger you, but you don't have to discover everything. You can just discover enough.
Now, well, you know, the subtitle of my book is Let Your Body Choose. If you know how to ask the question, your body will always give symptoms. You know, animals, you know, if they find some food, they'll lick it and taste it and think, nah, they won't eat it. You know, if it's wrong, they won't eat it. Whereas a human, you know, will eat some disgusting crap and feel sick afterwards. Ugh, I wish I hadn't eaten that. We're not as wise as animals, you know.
Well, for all sorts of reasons.
The animal will get the signal there's something wrong, so they don't eat it. And we are given those signals, but just ignore them. So it's really only a question of tuning your awareness. You know, if you feel kind of ugh after a meal, you know, ask yourself why. What was in that meal that was in there the last time I went ugh after a meal?
Yeah,
you're really slow. Eventually, you'll figure it out.
Now, the next pillar of medicine after nutrition, getting into environmental medicine, which I know you really were in the forefront of, is fascinating and also in some ways equally nebulous. I know in my own life I hit environmental toxins and stopped walking. And, you know, initially, who knows what it was? Could it have been the off-gassing of cheap carpets, the toxic well waters with the green copper, the Stachybotrys, I never did figure it out, so I moved. But in my case, I could move. But for most individuals, when they're hit by environmental toxins, it can just absolutely flatten you, and it's very difficult to track down.
That's right. I mean, there are certain clues you look for, as you will have been aware then, which is that, you know, first of all, it's a problem of place. You feel bad in certain places and you feel okay. Now, for example, if you feel great on holiday but not so good at home, everyone says, oh, well, I just felt on holiday. I was relaxed, so that was the real reason. And I always say, probably it's showing you that there's some environmental trigger that's taking place in your home. But it is a complex problem, Marlene. There are two confounding factors, really. One is that individual variation that I keep bringing it back to. So some people are extremely sensitive, and tiny doses will affect them. And it's no good saying, it's not responsible, is it, to say, well, the average person isn't affected.
You're right there, you're
no
again.
Problem, tough titty. You know, you've got to make allowance for the fact that in our society, that the lower 10% are very sensitive, the top 10%, you know, you could be like Rasputin. I mean, it was almost impossible to kill Rasputin. They gave him huge doses of cyanide that would have, you know, killed an orchestra, but it wouldn't kill him. But the other confounding variable is the way that these things interact. You can take any chemical and say, well, at that dose it's safe and nobody feels ill and yada, yada, yada. But you put it with, you know, 10 or 20,000 other chemicals, mm-hmm. and the interactions just become so complicated. And we get a problem called potentiation, you know, where 1 plus 1 isn't 2, 1 plus 1 is, you know, 8.
Is 11, right, sure.
Because together they somehow synergistically exacerbate the reaction. So all these assurances, you know, this is safe, that, you know, like aspartame and sucralose mm-hmm. we were talking about, it's saying these are safe. They, you know, even conceivably they might be in a laboratory with an ideal animal in an ideal environment. But when you mix it up with everything else that humans have to face, there's just no way you can say it's safe. All you can say is that, you know, it's very likely that things will interact in a complex way that we don't understand. And is there any wonder that people are getting sick, you know? I published a book in 1986 where I introduced this term, the human canary. Now, I didn't make it up. I'm not trying to claim that. But I published it in my book, and I'm pleased to say it stuck. You know, do you know this metaphor that, you know, the canaries, they took down the coal mines. If the bird got sick or fell over, it would show that the air was bad. It seems to me we have a lot of human canaries around, you know, who are really being sick and showing us loud and clear our environment is toxic and dangerous, and we just, you know, we're ignoring them. They're like the kind of human canary element, really.
Sure, and it's also tough to track down. And, of course, when it is one individual and three or four around them are not exhibiting outward symptoms in any big way, maybe they've got a lot of muted problems, but they're not keeling over, then you just look and say, oh, well, that's a sickly soul there. And, yeah. and the other thing, again, okay, you've got it down to maybe sick building syndrome and 30 people at work are not feeling well. But short of leaving the building, it's very difficult to figure out what the culprits are.
Well, to be honest, Rolly, in most situations, there isn't much point, you know, in knowing whether it's tricyclic this or dicyclic this or, you know, methyl ethyl or ethyl propyl or whatever. It almost becomes meaningless because there is a phenomenon called spreading. You know, when you start to react to one, it's a clumsy word, but it's the best we could come up with.
Right.
You react to one chemical and suddenly you find you're reacting to more, and then all of a sudden you're reacting to dozens of these things. The only answer really there for a person is a clean personal environment. Now, I don't usually recommend extremes like, you know, going to live in a sheltered caravan or extreme environmental control units, because generally that brings in its wake certain psychological problems. But surely, you know, it's common sense to clean up the home, you know, to get rid of unnecessary detergents, unnecessary cosmetics, I mean, if there is such a thing. I used to do a thing called, it's in all of my books except this DietWise book, what I call a nose survey. Just go around the house and smell on the principle that if there's enough to cause a smell, there's enough to cause a symptom. And it's worth remembering that. I believe that is absolutely correct. If you can smell it, it can make you ill.
Well,
just go through the cupboards and shelves and throw out anything that smells that you don't need. And cosmetics, you know, women, of course, we know the girls look lovely, they put their cosmetics on, and as guys, you know, I can only say we appreciate that. But it comes as a price. You know, you're putting things on your skin, and it's absolutely naive to believe it stays on the skin. It goes straight through the skin. The current figures that I've been able to find is that women absorb about a kilo, that's about 2 pounds of cosmetics through their skin every year.
Sure.
And, you know, the quick reaction, the knee-jerk of a doctor or scientist, oh, no, that's nonsense. But why do we give hormone patches? We put patches on the skin because we know it's going to go straight through the skin as if the skin weren't there. And that's true of all chemicals. So,
right. That I always wondered about that, too. Wait a minute. You're giving me transdermal therapy, and then you're telling me that the cream I'm lavishing on my legs isn't going to go into my skin. Let's review this, shall we? Absolutely. The other thing, though, when you mentioned the smell test, one of the problems that a number of people hit who have really been felled by environmental medicine is their sense of smell goes away.
Right. Now, I noticed that, too, in the early 80s. I'd begun to realize that it goes through a process, doesn't it? You have normal smell. Then you get a heightened sense of smell.
Mm-hmm.
The person is extremely acute. And then it finally disappears altogether. If I said in my writings, if that happens, you're going to have to find someone who still can smell. and get them to do it for you. And then the next thing that will happen as you progress backwards is it goes from no smell to where you've got this very, very acute sense of smell. And, you know, people can actually beat machines. You know, they can detect such a low level of molecule, like a gas leak, for example.
Mm-hmm.
The weirdest things, Rory. I've had somebody made sick from a gas leak in next door's house, you know, where it tracked through the brickwork and stuff. But I've sent them back to get the utility board back again and again, saying, I know there's a leak because, you know, my client is sick and they can definitely smell it. And eventually, you know, the gas utility people have had to admit that there was a leak. They tend to dismiss it below a certain level. You know, they say, that's not really a leak, that's not important. But it is important if you're a very, very sensitive person, if you're one of these canary types.
I would also think, since we're talking about the three pillars of medicine, that if you get yourself in balance with the nutrition, if you detox that way, that you're going to have a better time with the environmental complications.
Exactly. No, you put that so well, because, you know, you can't battle chemicals forever. It just becomes a paranoid lifestyle. And I used to feel very sad. You know, I saw patients from other doctors doing this. I mean, I never let my people do this, but they'd run around with a mask over their face and, you know, they'd gasp and run out of the room if someone took the top off a felt-tip pen and so on. That's crazy. You know, you can actually beat this condition. You know, good nutrition will help your detox pathways. You know, glutathione is magic, NADH from vitamin B3 and so on. You can develop detox pathways and help and unload in other ways. You know, I'm on record again with the BBC as saying, you know, divorce can be a good cure for allergy. You know, if you're just stressed to the limit and you leave home, even for a while, never mind a divorce, things can calm down to where your body can begin to come back into balance. So what you said is absolutely correct. You tackle it other ways.
Now, of course, that brings in the third pillar of medicine, which is in some ways the most elusive, and that's the emotion. And I know Louise Hay years ago in her little blue book set forth all sorts of mental causations for physical manifestations. And I suspect, though, that the majority of people, when they talk about that emotional component, maybe they have a lot of stress, but they really don't know what's behind their depression or their aggression or their self-esteem issues, that it's deeper than just I have stress.
Right, yes. I mean, you have to be careful to exclude the physical factors we've been talking about. But at core, yes, you're left with problems that are clearly and unequivocally emotional and psychological. I mean, that's the way we live. You know, it's the human condition, basically, isn't it? We know that stress is a killer. Stress causes health negatives, but it's very hard to define stress. I've got an interesting definition for you in a minute. But we know that what some person would find stressful, another person just finds challenging and interesting, you know, and they get revved up and toned and they enjoy the day, all these challenges, whereas somebody else would cave in. By the way, some years ago, I developed an interesting definition of stress. I'll let you try this on and see how it fits for you. But stress is basically the difference between what you want and what you've got.
Oh, that is interesting. Yeah. Now, I think you're right, because all of our unhappiness
are stress, yeah?
our emotions.
What you want, you're pretty calm and relaxed. But if you're wide away from it, you're really, really stressed. Anyway, there's been a lot of interesting work over the years developing this. I mean, this very weekend, I'm calling you from Vancouver Island because I've been doing a course in Vancouver on Dr. Hamer's work, this German doctor. He's a very fascinating character. I've had him on my website for a long time because of his work with cancer, but I finally decided I would... I interviewed a young lady on my radio show who, you know, was very interested in this. So I said, come on, listen to what you've got to say. And I must say, the work really is fascinating. He began in connection with cancer. You know, he got his own cancer and began to study cancer cases. And very quickly developed this iron, what he called it, the iron rule of cancer. And it applies to any disease, not just cancer, let's make that clear. But the iron rule was that everyone that develops cancer has some rather shocking psychic trauma in the 3 years leading up to the diagnosis or the onset of the tumor, whichever was soonest.
Mm-hmm.
He has 40,000 cases to prove it. And I must say, in my work, you know, I used to have a lot of cancer patients come through, and I never found any exceptions either. And patients are often amazed when you said, what happened in the last 3 years? That you know, it was shocking and you couldn't take it. And they'd think for a minute, say, oh, my God, you know, how did you know? You know, wow. It does seem like a kind of law. You know, it's very difficult to flout or violate. And it's so important. We do know that these shocks and disasters will lead to some kind of disease process.
All right. Going to leave it right there. with Dr. Keith Scott Mumby, and we'll pick that up. I too have heard some of those studies, which we'll go over. And I always think of stress as it's not what happens, it's our reaction to what happens. Of course, it's so easy to say and so hard to control. So all that and more coming up with Dr. Keith Scott Mumby and Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking to Dr. Keith Scott Mumby, and we got to the emotional component of the three pillars of medicine, nutrition, environment, and emotion. And it is fascinating. I think we all would agree that emotion might even be the number one deal here in our health, obviously mental, but physical as well. And that, of course, becomes even more elusive than tracking down what you're allergic to. For one thing, I think a lot of people don't even recognize some of their emotions. But more to the point, if it comes to stress, well, people know they've got it and people know they're reacting, but doing something about it makes it harder. And yeah, we're talking about the statistics and how it shows up in cancer research, and it's just chilling when you look at all the factors. So we will, and more, and next hour we'll take your calls with Dr. Keith Scott Mumby and Raleigh James right here on Coast to Coast AM. It is Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM with Dr. Keith Scott Mumby. And again, if you go to coasttocoastam.com, you can get direct links to Dr. Mumby's, Scott Mumby's website, and you'll find out some great offers as well as great information, a lot of what we're talking about as well. And going back to these studies you were mentioning, because they are chilling. Years ago, I had seen one on breast cancer in particular that showed a pattern where women who had been at least mildly unhappy through their life, something occurred where they were very happy, and then an ending to that occurred for some reason, and within that three-year period, bam, it was breast cancer. Have you seen those studies?
Yes, they're very consistent, aren't they? I mean, it goes back a long time, really. I mean, Galen, you know, 2,000 years ago, the Roman physician, he said, cancer doesn't strike a happy person. And I think there's a lot to that. The only thing is that cancer's been dramatically on the rise in, you know, recent years. Cancer is now the number one killer of men and women under 85 in the U.S. I don't think we're getting more unhappy. At least I don't think it's that. So we have to include other factors. But I would agree with what you said in the break announcement there, that I think probably, you know, mind and emotion is the number one deal. You know, it's so, well, it's powerful as a healer and powerful as a destructive cause, you know. Actually, it might be interesting to mention, we were talking about allergies before, but a man called Stephen Black, who was a medical hypnotist in the 1950s, did some very interesting experiments. He hypnotized people and said, you're allergic to bee stings, and they suddenly had severe reactions. You know, if you injected them, they got huge wheals. And then he'd hypnotize them and say, oh, no, you're not, and it would disappear. He would even hypnotize them so that you're allergic to whatever it was in the left arm, but you're not in the right arm. So if you gave them a shot in the left arm, nothing happened. If you gave a shot in the right arm, you got a huge typical allergic reaction. I mean, what is that telling you about the mind? You know, the mind, in a sense, the mind just runs everything anyway. So if you tackle it that way, it's amazing how many, you know, cancers disappear, heart disease fades, Paracelsus, you know, the famous medieval medical doctor and philosopher, he had four pillars. Not sure what his four or were, but certainly the one I don't use is love. He had love as his fourth pillar. Maybe I should rewrite mine and include that. I don't know what you think, but that has a lot to do with mind and emotions anyway, doesn't it? But anyway, let's stick with the three for now.
Of course, love and emotion. Love is a component of emotion, and it's one that for people who are able to love in the, you know, in the broad sense where you'll forgive and you won't hold the hurts. You mentioned cancer. One of the other things that I've seen in cancer patients, and you probably have too in studies, the old cancer only attacks the nicest people. And what was meant by that was that individuals who are holding in, literally their thoughts are eating away at them on a physical level, that there's a lot of repression very often. So some of the people who do hold their tongues and aren't lashing out very often are the people to come down with it.
That's right. The typical, you know, compliant, very humble person that doesn't want any trouble and don't want
to
fuss. They hold it in, and those are the ones. Of course, they can't hold it in. It comes out in some way, and often, tragically, it comes out as cancer.
But this gets back to the genome here when we're talking about if it comes out as cancer. Maybe for somebody else it comes out as RA or some other condition. I would assume that part of how it manifests is going to be the gene pattern.
That's right. Well, it's back to the you know, the target or shock organ idea. Where it strikes will depend on the weakest part of the system. You know, if it's the immune system, then cancer might well be the result. It's fascinating how these variety. You know, once you understand the basic principles, you get a different view of things. And instead of looking for the cause, you know, you begin to understand general causes and you see how variable it is. But within that framework, you can very quickly track down what that person's trigger problem is.
This ties nicely into something that I saw on your site about voice repatterning.
Right. Well, in fact, let me go straight on to an example of that using this machine. Because I'll explain how it works in a minute. But basically, it's digging up buried emotions. And I immediately thought of a case there that came in early on in the research. A girl had had a brain tumor. And she was famous for, you know, being completely emotionally repressed. She never had outbursts or tears or anything dramatic like that. And she had no memory of anything before the age of 6. And when she went to this system, it's a machine, you sit in a chair with a frequency, she immediately burst into tears and started screaming and wailing, and she had painful ankles and wrists and so on. Anyway, to cut a long story short, the memory that eventually came to the surface, I say eventually, I mean it was quite quick, this had been buried for 40 years, came to the surface, and it was one of these abuse stories. You know, as a child, she'd been led off into the forest, some grandfather, and she was stripped and tied down. That's where the pains in the wrist and the ankles came from, and then ritually abused. And of course, the adults do what they do. You know, they say, if you tell anybody, ever mention this, we'll kill you. So she closed the whole thing down, no memories at 6, and absolutely repressed all emotions. Well, of course, you know, it's going to come out sooner or later. And in her case, it came out as a brain tumor. Well, I have to tell you, the happy part of the story is it went into complete recession. You know, it disappeared on the MRI scan. All her chemical markers went to zero. This is without any chemo, without any radiation or any other treatment. I went to see her and interview her for a film that we made. And I must say I was a bit shocked. She was in great shape, by the way, but she wasn't even taking care of herself. You know, she'd still ate bad food and wouldn't take vitamins. Now, if I'd had a brain tumor, I'd be very careful what I was eating. But she was so sure, you know, that was it. That's what had caused it, and that had gone. Now I understand why I had it. I don't need it anymore. And she'd gone through the whole healing process, and she was fit as a butcher's dog, as we say in Britain.
So with voice repatterning, and I must say that this is for the very committed, because this is not cheap. But boy, the results
well, the
are fascinating.
No, the machine isn't cheap. That's for the practitioner. I mean, a session, if you want a session, it depends on the practitioner. But typically it's 60 or 70 or maybe $100 an hour. You know.
Oh, so it's not $11,700?
No, that's to buy the equipment, Rory. That's the whole shebang.
Oh, I read $11,700 and I thought, my God, I've never paid that for a car.
Oh, no, in that case, I must rework the site.
Yes.
That's to buy one, not to get the treatment.
Oh, yeah, because I was thinking.
A lot of therapists want this system, and they want to know, you know, what's the bottom line? How much is it going to cost?
Oh, and I think, okay, I'm going to get 4 days of therapy for $11,700. I'll stay sick.
Thanks for that tip, because as I say, I'll rework that. Anyway, it's just for the machine. Now, this is what it is. Okay, well, let's take it apart. I'll try and do it. Visually, it's easy, but to describe. First of all, it's based around vibrations and frequencies. It is energy medicine, by the way. I mean, let's not forget, most energy medicine, you know, is in the electromagnetic domain. Maybe it has quantum elements, but we're using sound energy here, but it's still energy, so it's energy medicine. A person will record a pattern of their voice, and you can, through a microphone, it's collected by software, and it shows it, displays it as a pattern. And then this is played back through a wooden chair. Now, the reason it's wooden is we don't want padding, because we want the person to feel the vibrations. And the loudspeakers are bolted to the chair. They're big transducers, actually, so that their own voice is played back to them through the body waters, if you like. You know, it shakes and vibrates the person. And then when you re-record after 10 minutes, you find that the pattern moves. So that's why we call it repatterning. But this really follows on a little bit from the work of Shari Edwards, who was on the program, I know, a few weeks ago. There's so much information in the voice pattern. But what we're finding is that there's ancestral information there, too. When you get a person to talk about, say, their father, a certain pattern appears, whereas if they talk about mother or uncle, it's a different pattern. It's a unique pattern for father. And the same with grandparents. And what the researcher who developed this machine, a man called Calvin Jung, found was that you can actually change a person's emotional landscape quite quickly by having them talk about an ancestor. You then go through this process of playing back, re-recording, playing back and re-recording, and they shift emotionally. This is how this girl got rid of her brain tumor. You know, she was working with a grandparent. And by the way, one of the great discoveries is that most of the trouble comes from the grandparent generation. Freud taught us it was from our parents, which, you know, it doesn't really help. You can't fix that. But when you know it's grandparents, you can fix it, and somehow, because it's grandparents, it dissolves very easily. Anyway, this girl just simply spoke about her grandfather, and the pattern emerged, and by reprocessing it, suddenly these memories were released. So it's all collected by software, so you can see a visual display pattern. That's why we call it patterning or repatterning. The only other thing you need to know is the person has to sit in a magnetic field. Now, those who have read my book, Virtual Medicine, which I hope is everybody who's listening, but you would recognize straight away this is the phenomenon of cyclotron resonance. It's a very powerful, it's from classic physics, it's not even fancy quantum stuff. It's a phenomenon of classic physics where you have a fixed magnetic field and an oscillating magnetic field, and you can charge up particles. In fact, it's how the MRI scanner works. But what's happening here is the person is sitting in a fixed magnetic field and then being subjected to oscillations caused by the vibrations. And that can produce very profound biological effects. Cyclotron resonance has enormous impact on us biologically. I explained all this in Virtual Medicine. It's probably the main reason why things like hands-on healing and telepathy work. You know, we're all in a fixed magnetic field, and that's the Earth's magnetic field. And because of the phenomenon of cyclotron resonance, it teaches us that very low frequencies need only very, very, very low intensities. So, you know, it doesn't need to be a big deal. It doesn't need to be a strong field, but it can still have a terrific interaction. So by adding the magnetic field, it produces this really amazing jump forward. You know, a person would not only get a pattern shift, but it would be permanent. You know, previous systems, you can make changes, but then it drops out again if you take away the frequency, but not on this machine. It's called the vocal because it's a voice calibration. And I've seen some of the most awesome things that I've ever seen in medicine with this machine.
Okay, couple questions. Now, and you bring up one of them in your book, and that is most people don't know all of their grandparents. Some people don't know any of them. And
that's right. But if you get them to talk about the person, the pattern shows up. That's the amazing thing here, right, is the person is carrying their ancestor as an energy, whether they know it or not. And even if they've never met the person, we just say, well, tell us what you do know, or maybe you've seen a photograph, or what have you learned from family tradition? And if all else fails, we say, tell us what your instinct says. What kind of hunch do you get about this person? Describe what you think they were like. And sure enough, a pattern shows up. You know, it's a unique pattern.
Okay.
And we can follow this pattern down through the lines. It's really quite fascinating.
Here's the next question on top of that, and it's kind of a nature versus nurture. For somebody who is adopted, and let's say they didn't even know they were adopted for years, but they're adopted, and now they didn't know any grandparents either, you know, on either side, or they're adopted or their family of growing up. What shows up?
Interestingly, you would think, wouldn't you, that it's probably the biological parent, you know, must be nature, you know, and so on. It says the biological parent must be the significant one. But in fact, empirically, we find it's not so. The adoptive parents are the strong determining influence, and therefore the adoptive grandparents are the strong determining influence. And again, it doesn't matter whether the child ever met these grandparents or not. They receive this energy vibration. It comes via the parent. It's like it skips a generation. You know, that occurs so many times in nature, like, you know, the inheritance of hemophilia and so on. But also it shows up in so many traditions, Rory, like the Indian tradition, American Native tradition. The grandfather is a particularly significant figure, you know, more so than the parent. And that shows up in a lot of tribal cultures, too.
So
it skips a generation.
What you're telling me then is, because obviously in an adoptee situation, it's not a generation in the sense we would normally think of it biologically, but what it sounds like to me is that it is the grandparent's effect on the parent that in turn affects the child.
Right, except that you do not necessarily see an exact replication. In other words, you see a specific pattern that might show something like, conflicting beliefs, say, for example, and that doesn't necessarily show up in the parent. But then it shows up in the child, wow, the offspring, when the offspring. It's only, remember, we don't invite the grandparents in to do a recording. It's only the person talking,
sure,
about their grandparent or their,
sure,
adoptive grandparent. Somehow, and it's so fascinating. You know, when you talk about one person, you get a certain pattern. If you say, "Tell me about that person's wife," you get a completely different pattern. It's really fascinating. You'd think, well, it's the same person talking. It ought to be the same pattern right through. And yet it isn't. You know, it's so unique. And one of the things that we find is that people often go out and marry their, you know, their parent. Or
right,
their
of course.
There's some very friendly vibration here that, even if it's not friendly, it's so intrinsic to them,
mm-hmm,
that they, you know, it's got enormous importance for relationships, because the person will either go out and marry their pattern, or they'll marry someone with the missing part of the pattern.
Right.
You know, if they have a lopsided balance. And by the way, I should say this machine is all about balance. You know, it doesn't take away or give anything, really. It
right.
fills in the missing parts until it balances up. So what might be way lopsided into the, fear and anger band, you just simply balance it up with the opposing frequencies, and it brings the person back into balance, and they feel fine. So it's not, we're not getting rid of emotions. We don't get rid of the ability to be angry or feel sad
right.
if something inappropriate happens. But the person is then free of it. You know, they're not driven by something that they don't understand that comes from deep within. And of course, that's what we know about emotions. They come from deep within.
Sure.
And we don't know where they're from. As soon as we know where they're from, they stop bugging us.
And
so
it,
if you realize, you know, your fear of cats was actually something your grandfather had, then you don't have to be afraid of cats anymore. It's not your stuff. It's his stuff.
Sure, sure. And the other thing about this, when you say, you know, it's invisible and all that, but it's similar when you're talking about different people, why your voice would shift. Well, when you're talking about different people, your aura shifts. So everything would shift. And that makes, you know, all the sense in the world. I want to ask you about one more thing, because I know there are people who will come through the email and strangle me if I don't before we go to open lines. And that is the Sinar device.
Okay, well, for those who have not heard of it, just let me just quickly, in three or four sentences, this is an amazing Russian device which I introduced in my book, Virtual Medicine, and I christened it Star Trek Medicine, because it seemed to me that it's about the size of a TV remote, and I couldn't help but think of the little thing that Dr. McCoy, you know, Bones, carried around. You know, you flip the lid and press the button and the guy will grow a new hand or something. It seemed to me that we weren't very far from that. This is an amazing energy healing device. It is about the size of a TV remote. You apply it to the skin, and it alters energies, basically. I mean, the way to think of it is that pathological energies, pathology is generally fixed energy. You know, healthy energies are dynamic and flowing. So you usually have stuck energies where there's pathology and disease. So it's a bit like, in a way, throwing in a hand grenade there. You know, it just blows everything up and disrupts the fixed pattern so that nature can then get in there and realign it into a new dynamic pattern. Anyway, there is also a crossover with brain chemistry, you know, releasing neuropeptides and all that kind of thing. So it's a very fascinating theory that I haven't got time to go into, but it's a super little machine that you hold in your hand. I think every medicine cupboard should have one of these. It's terrific for, you know, toothache, you've got tonsillitis. I've seen it heal bones in mm-hmm. a third of the time. I had one patient where she was gray with pneumonia, and I just simply ran this 15 or 20 minutes over the front and back of her chest, which at that point looked bright red like a tomato. But she could suddenly breathe. She got up and put her robe on and made me a cup of tea before I left. Next day I went back, and after just 10 minutes more, she threw her antibiotics down the toilet. I mean, it can be that dramatic.
Well, the fellow that avoided the amputation was one of the most stunning.
That's right, yeah. He was 1 week away from a below knee amputation for intractable pain. And he thought, well, what have I got to lose? Let's try this crazy new machine. So after one treatment, the pain had gone. So next day they thought, well, let's do it again. And there was such a dramatic improvement, the surgeons hesitated about the operation. On the third day, this is only like 1 hour at a time, the person, all the pain was gone. He never did need the amputation. And he went home, and he didn't even behave sensibly. He was digging the garden a week later instead of having his leg off. I mean, it can be that dramatic. And, you know, there's an amazing story, which I must tell you, in honor of my host and hostess here. I'm staying at the house of friends who are actually Scanner experts, and Laurie Hachet, the lady of the house here, she's British, and she's a really a dab hand with the Scanner. She has an extraordinary story to tell.
All right, well, let me... Let me hold that one right there because I do want to hear it. And then I know everybody will line up to talk to you. Dr. Keith Scott Mumby is our guest. We'll conclude. By the way, the device looks a lot like Star Trek when you see them in Deep Space Nine or whatever using the device. I think they were probably in line with what the Russians were doing. It is developed Russian and fascinating originally for cosmonauts that actually they never used it on. So we'll talk about that and more coming up on Coast to Coast AM.